Ja, þeir eru hjartanlega velkomin í fyrsta þáttin af podcastinu Sjókajak á Íslandi. Minn fyrsti viðmælandi Anula Jóhim, pólsku ræðari sem við þekkjum flest. En Anula hefur verið búsett á Íslandi þó nokkuð mál, starfa sem leiðsögumaður meðal hans. Anula öflugur ræðari, en hún nýkomin heim úr mögnuðum leiðangri. Mér langaði aðeins að heyra hennar hlið og þessuna tóku við spjallið við Anula. Ég vona að þið fyrirgefið mér hljóðið, en þetta tekið upp í gegnum símtal og ég get sagt ykkur það að það var frábær skemmtun að tala við Anulu. En ég ætla ekki að hafa fleiri orðum það og ég vona að þið hafið gaman af.
So, welcome, Anula, to the first Icelandic podcast about sea kayaking. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm doing all right. Yeah, I'm quite rested already after my trip. I'm in quarantine right now in Vík, so I have all the time in the world to just relax now.
Really good. I'm really glad that you got back to Iceland after your trip. I'm going to try to pronounce your name. You will correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Anula Jóhim?
Jóhim.
Jóhim, all right. Almost there. That's good.
Almost there. That was nice, yeah.
Yeah, first try. That's good. So, yeah, can you tell me just a bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Polish. I live in Iceland. I've been living in Iceland for the last 3.5 years, more or less. Yeah, I'm a sea kayaking and hiking guide up in the westerns in the summertime. Yeah, so sea kayaking is the main thing that I do for work and in my free time as well.
Yeah. So what's your background in kayaking? Like, do you have any before the... You know, sea kayak stuff. Do you have anything else before that?
Well, I started kayaking, not sea kayaking, but kayaking in general when I was 6 years old. My dad is a whitewater paddler. So it was kind of, you know, a family thing to go kayaking, rivers, lakes, and a little bit of sea, but not that much. So I've been doing that since I was a kid, on and off. Then I kind of I've gone into sea kayaking a bit more seriously when I was an adult and fully dedicated when I came to Iceland because of when I started being a sea kayaking guide. So I put a lot of energy there and time into just getting better and train. Yeah.
I've known you for a few years now, and I've seen a huge difference in, like, in you know, skills and all that in those years. So, because you have been, you know, you've been seeking all this cinemas and whales, you know, all over the world, really. You travel a lot.
Yes, I do. I try to travel as much as I can. Although last few years, it's been mainly for kayaking. Before I came to Iceland, like, travel just for traveling's sake. But now I kind of choose my destinations where there's enough water for me to paddle in. So, yeah, but mainly I paddle a lot in the UK. So I go around the UK and paddle there. But I've been paddling in New Zealand and Croatia, Turkey, Sweden, and a couple of other places. So, yeah, that's my thing, definitely.
Yeah, it's been amazing to follow you. You know, your travels around the world. And some posts have been quite jealous, I have to say, but it's... It's good to live through other people sometimes, so that's a good thing. So the main reason for the chat that we're having now is you just finished an amazing trip. Why Sicily?
That's a good question, actually, because I've never had Sicily in mind as a paddling destination before this winter. But I had a bit of free time this winter, and I wanted to do something with that time that will progress me as a paddler. So I decided that I'm going to go and paddle somewhere. And there were three things that kind of led me to Sicily. So first of all, I wanted the place to be warm.
Quite understandably, you know.
Yeah. Although I ended up paddling in the dry suit for most of the trip, but still it was warm. And my, you know, it was warmer than Iceland at the warmest point of summer. So it kind of ticked the box there for sure. I wanted it to be a challenge for me in some way. So Sicily is the biggest island of the Mediterranean Sea. It's around 1,000 kilometers to go around it, and I've never done a trip like this before. So that kind of ticked another box for me. And yeah, I wanted it also to be solo trip. So it's something that I've never done before, except for a short four-day trip that I've been in Cornwall last year. So I started looking, I started thinking about these three things, and I started looking, and I just looked at the map, and it's like, okay, like, where's going to be warm, close enough for me to kind of get myself there so it wouldn't be, you know, too much effort and money invested in it. So it was Mediterranean Sea was kind of my choice, and Sicily turned out to be warm enough. Big enough.
I've done two of those expeditions, and after both of them, I said, I'm never doing a similar thing to this again. I want to go somewhere where it's warm, that I don't have to wear my dry suit all the time. And then I talked to people like we're doing now, and I've talked to people who've done something in Croatia and in Spain, and they all say the same thing. Like, we all wanted this warm weather, but the problem that comes with that is you always have this sea breeze. It's never calm. And
that is true.
So people, like, in the end, they would actually, you know, I will take the cold and the rain if I can get, you know, calm winds for 10 days.
It was windy all the time. It's exactly what you're just saying, that it's sea breeze every day. And I love the sun, to be honest. Like, I haven't had that for such a long time. Just, you know, stepping for a break, just taking that dry suit off, you know, and just sitting in the sun and not getting cold. Like, wow, just blew my mind. The first few breaks that I've done, I was like, this is amazing. Like, it was so hard to get back on the water. But that's not a difficult thing, you know. Like, when you paddle in Iceland, it's quite easy. You stop for a lunch break, you've done your lunch, and you get back on the water. There's no reason for you to stay on that land because it's just colder. But in Sicily or anywhere else with this amount of sun, it's just difficult. Like, I had to really, you know, have a regime that I'm, okay, this is time now. Like, I need to go, you know. But yeah, the wind was definitely a factor all the time. I think I had a one day when it was cloudy enough for me not to have sea breeze. So I had maybe one day that was actually like calm. Yeah.
That sounds tough. But to the trip, like, how many days did you paddle and how many days did you have off?
So the whole trip took me 37 days in terms of full days on the water. I had 26 days on the water. And 11 days off the water because of the weather.
All right. I'm just imagining, you know, those really nice beaches with a really strange person in full dry suit with the, you know, beach smell, putting up the, you know, the camp and, you know, cooking for the night, and then just, you know, knocked out after the day. You came in, you know, dried everything up and stood there in the sun and enjoyed.
Well, actually, with those people on the beaches, there are no people on the beaches because it's winter in Sicily.
Wow.
And even though for me it was the warmest, you know, warmest month in last year that I had, it's still winter in Sicily, and it's winter for Sicilians, so they don't hang out on the beaches because it's just cold for them. So I did not have that many interactions actually during my paddling around, and so I. There was a bit of, you know, people were wondering, what the hell are you doing here? And they're just asking, like, where are you going right now? Like, I'm going around Sicily. Like, what are you doing? Like, around? Alone? Are you crazy? It's winter. Like, what are you doing here? There is actually this saying, in wintertime, they say that the sea is closed. So in wintertime for Sicilians, there is not much activity going on. There are some fishermen out, but people, they don't do leisure stuff on the water because, you know, sea is closed. Wintertime, like, come on, it's too cold. Water,
yeah.
16 degrees, that's freezing. So,
oh, my Lord.
So, yeah, there are not that many people being surprised by my presence because they could not see me that often. So that was quite comfortable.
Yeah, about the temperature, like, if the sea is about 60 degrees, what's the temperature most of the time?
Well, yeah, the sea is, right now, maybe when I started, it was around 14 degrees, the weather was quite good in terms of sun, so it kind of got warmer at the end of the trip for sure. In terms of the air temperature, it probably averaged around 15 degrees.
All right. That sounds warm.
Yeah.
You know, we've been having a tough winter here in Iceland, so 15 sounds quite good. We'd take that any day.
Exactly. And that's 15 in the shade. In the sun, it's 20-something. So it was quite, made me really happy. Got a lot of vitamin D going.
In your preparation for the trip, I mean, I know you did some stuff in the UK. I did a lot of paddling, you know, as much as you could probably. How about gear and food and all that? How was it? Because you were in Poland before the trip, right? And you had to get all the stuff with you. Did you fly it over there, or how did you get the boat and all that?
So I actually bought a boat from a Polish company called Aquarius.
All
right. I was planning to rent the boat, but when I checked the prices in Sicily, I decided that it's a little bit outside of my budget. So I started looking for different options, and I figured that buying a boat in Poland, getting it shipped and selling it in Sicily might be a good option for me. So that's what I did. And the company, Aquarius, they were kind enough to arrange the shipment for me. So
they paid for shipping.
Well, I paid for shipping, but they did the whole logistics of it.
Okay.
I would have no idea how to arrange it. So, like, they did it because they have, you know, they send their boats all around Europe, so they kind of have their contacts and stuff. So they managed to do that for me, and all my kayaking gear just came with me on the plane. The rest of the stuff. Yeah, there was there's a lot of gear involved.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and you know me, like, I'm not the biggest person in the world, so it's a grotesque, you know, seeing me with all my kit, but yeah, manageable. Food, though, I was thinking a little bit, you know, if I should take adventure food, but at the same time, Sicily, you know, it's not a, you know, civilized place, and you can just stop at ports and do your shopping there, so decided not to get involved with all the adventure food stuff. I just took some dry stuff from Poland as a backup, and I did the shopping in Sicily, and then probably once a week I would stop and just restock.
Mm-hmm. You're a vegetarian, right?
Yeah. I mean, I eat fish.
So what was the main food for the trip? Because when I did Ireland, fish and chips and Guinness, like every other night, and then, you know, in the end of the trip, we were actually aiming for the fish and chips, you know, hotspots. I'm pretty sure you didn't have that luxury.
No.
So what was the main food like? Was it rice or?
So couscous, which is very, very popular in Sicily, and you can get it everywhere, and super easy, quick to prepare. Pasta as well. So pasta, you know, with pesto. Took some stuff from Poland as well, like different kinds of grains that I could cook. So I kind of tried to mix the stuff a bit. And because it was quite easy to shop, it was not a problem. I didn't, you know, go into dehydrated food that much because there was no need for that.
Yeah. How about the, you know, when you're cooking on the spot and all that, did you manage to eat enough? You know, you're burning through calories through the day if you're doing long days. You can be burning like 6,000-8,000 calories per day. Did you manage to eat enough? You know, did you lose a lot of weight? How did you manage that?
Well, I don't think I managed to eat enough because I lost probably around 5 kilos on the trip. So not really. It took me a little bit to kind of get the rhythm right with the food. I decided to stop quite often, so if I could take a break in summer, I would take a short break to stretch my legs and eat something. So I would take 2-3 breaks a day before stopping for the night. And so I had prepared some sandwiches and also some fresh stuff like oranges and stuff, just to, you know, have nibbles, a lot of Snicker bars.
We all love our Snickers.
It's like the best kayaking food ever. I know, and it's like it's good to have this experience because you know exactly what you need in the moment. One Snickers is one hour of paddling for me.
I have the same luxury problem. One Snickers I can manage for, 45, 60 minutes. I have that routine when I, I have 1 hour left. I sometimes, take one Snickers. So when I land, I am actually not really hungry, so I can put off the camp and everything.
But exactly.
It's a good advice for everyone, if you're doing camping, and don't go hungry into camp. Have something before you land so you can have some energy to put up all the stuff.
Exactly. I do exactly the same thing.
Yeah. How about, because you're talking about camping, because it's quite common, all over the place, that you need a special permit to put up camps. You can't tent here and there, and everything's all private. How was it in Sicily? Did you need permit to put up, camps on the beach? Or?
Well, I didn't have a permit. It's not exactly legal to camp, to wild camping. I talked to some locals and they said that I should not have a problem as long as I'm respectful. So that's what I did. Also in wintertime, there's the possibility of finding an open campsite is very limited. There are some campsites around the coastline that in summertime, it's easier to get to them, obviously. So that would not be a problem in summertime, but in wintertime, they're just closed.
Okay.
And yeah, so logistically for me as well, my priority was to obviously stay safe. And so I would choose places that don't have road access.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That would be my choice. Yeah.
What kind of a gear did you use? Were you using tent or top or BV or?
So I used the tent. There are mosquitoes in Sicily, unfortunately. So not that many still right now, but there are some. I would use a tent, multi-person tent.
How about sleeping bag and all that? Because, for me here in Iceland, because I know you work in hot zone, they also so. Is there a huge difference between camping, in Sicily, and then, let's say, hot week? What would you say is, because we know how it's to camp in Iceland, what's the biggest difference between those?
I would say that the biggest difference is that it's not that easy to find a good camping spot on the coastline. Sicily is heavily populated along the coastline. It's very tricky to find a good camping spot in the right distance. So some days I would have much shorter just because there was nowhere else to sleep than that one spot that I could stop.
No.
And in Iceland, it's not an issue that much. But yeah, it's mainly sand as well in Sicily. There are some rocky stretches of coastline. A lot of it is sand. There's not that many grassy places where you can camp, which especially doing a trip this long means that sand is absolutely everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. You can't get rid of it. And it's in your food. It's in your hair. It's in your, your skin is tattooed with sand, after a few days. And
carpet is full and all the day hatches and everything.
I brought so much Sicilian sand with me to Iceland right now. It's ridiculous.
I think it's the difference between, because I haven't been there, so I can't put myself in that shoes. But when we go camping here in Iceland, we need this, I would say, really good gear. We need a good tent that can handle the weather. We need the good sleeping bag and all that. Is it the same there? Because if you have a lot of sand, because after a few days in the sand, you want to get the rocks back, but after a few days in the rocks, you want to get the sand, and that's how it is. But would you say that if you do a trip again, would you take the same gear in the trip as you had in this one, or did you would you change something?
I think I need a new tent because I broke mine a little bit. There's definitely a bit of a, so if there's no wind, there's a lot of condensation going on. It's true for every place, really. the nights in Sicily, they were quite warm. So if there was a lot of condensation in the tent, I would just have everything wet. And even though it's sunny, the day is still quite short. So I would, you know, I would not have that. I would not have a chance to dry my stuff in the sun. So I would probably invest in a better tent and a different sleeping bag, because I have a down sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Which is really nice, the compact and light.
Yeah.
But if there's no chance of drying it, it just the down gets really dumb. So
yeah.
I would look into something synthetic for a trip trip this long. Yeah.
You go for the fiber or something else.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I think because I've tried both of them. I've actually gone back to down. I used to you know use those big fiber ones because I had the experience once in a trip that my down bag got wet, and it's probably one of the worst nights that I have ever experienced in the trip because I didn't sleep. I was so cold. You know. We think we learned from the mistakes, but I do have a down bag again. So
yeah, it's a priority. You know, if you do a longer trip, it's a priority for you to have a good night's sleep because you need to do a lot of stuff during the day. So at least that should work properly because other stuff will happen anyway, you know. Stuff will break and things. But if you can be certain that at least you're going to have a good night's sleep, that's something, you know.
So tell me... what was your longest day in the trip?
My longest day was my last day. I was not planning for it to be this long. So on the last day, I did 66 kilometers.
Yeah, that's a stunning day.
It's a distance
day.
that I've never done before, you know.
Yeah.
So I was not expecting to do a day this long. Maybe if I had very good, you know, tailwind. But I didn't on that day, unfortunately. But the reason why I ended up doing this distance was because of course, coronavirus. In Sicily, they started introducing several bans, and every day would bring something new. And eventually, they introduced a ban on outdoor activity.
Wow.
And I was maybe, you know, 3 days short of Catania, where I started my trip, so 3 days short of closing this loop when they introduced that ban. I paddled one day from that thinking, okay, what I'm going to do? Like, what's the plan here? Like, obviously, like, I'm so close. I don't want to just, you know, finish and get back on land. But at the same time, I can't, you know, I need to watch out for people to see me. Like, I can't be seen by anyone. I can't get caught by the Coast Guard. Because they're just going to pull me off and that's going to be it. Looking at the weather forecast, there was supposed to be very bad weather coming in. So I knew that I have just 2 paddle days and then I need to stay in the tent for one day and then I can maybe finish the day after that, which was not ideal because that's a very long time of being exposed to, you know, people seeing you and catching you. So I did this one day, which was 47-48 Ks, and in the evening I had to make a decision on what I'm going to do. Just decided that I'm going to try and do it. 66 Ks. I got encouraged by Francesco, which was my contact on land.
Yeah.
I was helping
so he's
with
one of the locals, right?
Yeah.
He's a sea kayaker and owns the company there.
Exactly. Francesco Petrella. He's an amazing guy. He's so cool.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him about it and he was like, yeah, you should just do it. And I was like, I have no idea if I'll be able to do it. Okay. I don't have that, you know, experience. I don't have that knowledge of my body. If I can, you know, even push that hard.
Yeah.
But I managed, you know, I left before sunrise and I finished after dark. Yeah. I was really proud of myself. 6 Ks at the race. It was a beautiful finish. And the weather in the day was horrible too, you know. I had winds from all directions, quite strong winds, so it was not just, you know, easy sailing, unfortunately for me. And I spent quite a bit of time in the kayak, so my body was really, you know, sore and stiff. I finished, you know, at the, like, I arrived at the small beach where I started from over a month before, you know, in rain and 1 meter swell in the darkness. It was very dramatic at the very finish as well. So it was a great experience, you know, very empowering, you know, knowing that I can do something with this.
Yeah, I mean, it's 66K. It's a long day, and for people that are listening and haven't done such a distance, it's not just physically tough. It's also mentally tough to stay. Well, at least for me, it's difficult to keep your focus on the point. If you, for your example, you haven't done that distance before. So, like you said, you weren't sure if you could actually just, pull it off or not. So I think it's so much learning when you actually cross the line. If you've done 47, that's a long day for most expeditions. Like 50K is a fantastic day. But 66K is, that's you wouldn't be able to do many days in a row like that.
No.
So that's the point. Was that, the toughest moment of the trip? Was it the last day?
No, it wasn't. Physically it was, but not mentally. I had this moment in the South Coast that no one really knows about because I never admitted it to anyone. I had a small incident that made me feel quite vulnerable. It was quite bad weather. Mediterranean Sea is small basin. Swell is not the same as in Atlantic Ocean. Very short wave, short period, quite bouncy and chunky and tough weather day. Meter and a half, 12 for 6 winds. And I was going kind of around the corner and I've noticed that there is a massive, cloud, like cumulonimbus cloud, massive anvil shaped with a wall of water coming down. And it's kind of coming at me. And as you know, like usually when a storm like this comes, there are quite strong gusts right before it.
Yeah.
I figured like I'm already, not having a great condition here. And it's blowing for 6. It's going to be blowing for 7 when this comes. And with that wall of water, I'm not going to be able to see anything. So I figured that's going to be a good idea to land and just wait for it to kind of pass. And then I thought maybe it's just going to go around me. Maybe it's just not going to come through. But then I'm looking at the wind direction. I'm like, I know
so
how it's going to be.
So you were optimistic on it at that point?
Well, that was the thought that I was kind of having in my mind. Like, maybe it's going to go around. But then I thought, every time I think something like that, it comes straight at me. So I'm going to be smarter than this time, and I'm going to land. Especially that the storm was coming quite close. And I had the first kind of safe landing was around 4 kilometers away, which I figured, I don't really have time to do that. And the coastline was very rocky, and I had that swell coming in. And I saw this one steep beach that I could possibly land on. I was sitting there observing it, and I figured maybe if I find the right time, in between the waves, in between those rocks, I can land there, just jump out and wade through. And I decided to do that. So I got closer to that beach, looking where's a good passage in between the rocks. And the set came. I didn't manage to kind of reverse into it, and a wave picked me up. And I started side surfing on it, and it capsized me. So I rolled up. But that was not a successful roll. So I went in, still surfing. And I thought, I don't think I have enough time for another roll because I'm surfing onto those rocks in a boat that weighs 80 Ks plus me.
Yeah.
So I decided on a wet exit.
Okay.
And I did that. So I had to swim in with the boat to the shore.
Did you, were you clipped into the boat or was it, did you have a lifeline or? Anything like that?
No, I was not clipped in.
So the boat went on the beach and then you came along after it all?
Well, I ended up, so when I got out of the boat, I was still holding the boat, I was holding the paddle, kind of managed to push the boat a slightly different direction. So I ended up landing in a slightly different spot than I initially thought I will.
Yeah.
So I swam in with the boat.
Yeah. Did you get caught out, or, you know, on the wave? Or was it something that, you know, when you were observing, did you see it, you know, did you see the spot when the waves were breaking, or was it just, you know?
Well, it was like the beach was not really a gully, but it was like a small beach surrounded by rocks. So it was a very narrow passage that I wanted to go through. So because I knew that I'm surfing on those rocks that I was kind of going to avoid when paddling in. Yeah.
If you think back, like, you obviously have done a lot, what would you do differently in that situation if you had the opportunity, you know, to go back and do it all over again?
I would keep paddling.
Yeah, even though you know that your time frame is not going to let you do those 4K before this weather hits you, would you still go on?
I think so.
Did you never think about, you know, going back, or?
I was thinking about going back, but I had a tailwind, so I would have to fight against that 4.6 going towards that storm I was trying to avoid. So yeah, probably like one before I made that corner, I could have landed before I made that corner for sure. But after that corner, I should have just kept paddling. That decision of landing there was just a bad decision. I made a bad decision there, a bad call. And everything that happened after, kind of, you know, a wet exit, that was a good decision. I would not want to surf onto those rocks. So especially that I was not sure if that second, you know, roll is going to be in time. So that kind of the whole incident, the way it happened, like I would do probably the same thing over again.
Yeah.
But I would make different decisions that led up to it, you know.
Yeah, of course. If it makes you feel any better, we all, you know, do mistakes. And I made a few in my first trip and even the second one. And I know, well, all the people that I know that have done big expedition, they make mistakes anyway.
I mean, you know what? It's the whole situation made me feel vulnerable, you know. But at the same time, it makes me feel vulnerable talking about it too, you know. Nothing happened to me physically during that incident, but my ego got bruised big time. So that's something I'm still recovering from, but I wanted it to be the challenge, you know. I wanted this trip to be a challenge, and that was a challenge for me because I made that mistake, you know. Like it makes me think a lot about my thinking process and decision making. So I learned a lot from challenges, and that was definitely that moment for me. And that was definitely a learning point. So
yeah,
I'm kind of happy that it happened, even though it wasn't pleasant.
It depends on the person, but in the incidents that I have had, it made me a better paddler. And you know, afterwards, when you're constantly thinking about and improving your decision making on the spot, I'm because I know you, and I'm quite sure it's gonna improve you a lot as a paddler.
And you know what's really good about this experience is because you know this, many people might not, like I train a lot, so I do a lot of courses, I train with different coaches, I go through incident management a lot to kind of improve it for myself and also for my line of work as a guide. So obviously I made a bad decision there for myself, but the whole incident and the way I was acting and thinking when it was happening was very automatic. And that's thanks to all the training that I've done during the last few years. And it was like, looking back, it's like I just acted, you know, instantly and knew exactly what I have to do. There was absolutely no fear and no panic in it. It was just, this is really happening.
Yeah, and you knew exactly what you needed to do to, you know, have the outcome that you want to have. And you had, you know, it might hurt your ego, but, you know, you finish the trip and you're okay afterwards. That's, you know, obviously the key point in that one.
Yeah, I mean, it can be, you know, if it's too easy, like, you're not trying hard enough, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and if it hurts your ego, it's I hurt my ego sometimes, and you know, that it's so good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes you a better person in the end, I think. You know, if you get kicked down every now and then. But yeah, thank you really much for sharing that moment with me. I think that's the thing that I want to hear. Like, that's fantastic. how long was the trip? How long was the final number on the GPS?
So the distance around the island is 1,013 kilometers.
Yeah.
I did around 1,023 kilometers. So the 10 kilometers extra was me going back and forth sometimes.
Yeah, looking for spots to land and stuff like that.
Looking for spots to land, I had a situation where I had to kind of trace back a couple of kilometers because it was also a coronavirus problem. I went to do some shopping, so I stopped in the harbor to go to a shop and get some food. But that was already when the whole kind of chaos around the virus started. So getting into a shop was a challenge. It took me so much time. I did not manage. Like I got back in the boat half an hour before sunset. So instead of doing 10 kilometers I was planned for, I had to trace back 4 kilometers to the nearest beach before the harbor to find a spot to camp. Also, I had a day when I went out early in the morning and the conditions were much bigger than forecasted, and I just turned around and went back into the harbor.
How accurate was the forecast for this area? Just like, you know, we have a pretty good forecast back here in Iceland. How good was the forecast of kayaking in Sicily?
I would say overall really good, but the weather changes a lot. So forecasting itself is really good. There's there are quite a few websites and apps you can check the weather, but the weather changes. There was one day that I actually lost because of that, because the forecast was absolutely horrible the night before. And then when I woke up thinking that I have a day off because the weather is so bad, I'm not going to stop kind of, fussing around a bit. I finally checked the weather and it turned out it was the perfect day for a paddle. So
we all have that moment.
Yeah. So it changes. And then you have the forecast and then you need to add the sea breeze on top of it.
Yeah.
It kind of took me a while to get my bearings, but I was quite confident in the weather forecast overall. I just had to check it, all the updates.
Yeah. What did you use mostly for navigation? Did you have a map or compass or a GPS? Or what was your main tool in that category?
I had maps. So I had maps. That was my main thing. I did have a GPS as well, but that was my, just in case. I need to check something, or I paddle at night and I'm not sure, so I had a backup, but I would not use it every day. I usually use paper maps that I had printed before.
Yeah. How about safety gear? What did you use in that category?
I would say, the standard stuff. So I have two phones, the radio for communication. Yeah, GPS also is kind of a safety measure for me. So I need to call in help. And from a new piece of gear that I recently got, PLB, I had it with me. I had it attached to my buoyancy aid.
Yeah.
If I needed. So that was that. And my big safety also was Francesco, because he was my safety on land.
Yeah.
So I would send him my location every night.
Yeah. So how crucial to, to have a local guy on land as safety, weather and everything. How crucial was that for you in this trip?
It was massive for me. I mean, it was great because I could, ask him if I was not sure about something. I could ask him, and his massive local knowledge. He paddled around Sicily himself, and there are several people on the island that paddle around Sicily, so he was a massive help to me also logistically, helping move the boats and talk to the whole community around, tell them that there is an Anula paddling around Sicily. So I had contacts all around the island after first week.
That's amazing.
So that was
how big
great.
Is how big is paddling community over there?
It's not that big, actually. People complain a lot that there is not enough sea kayakers in Sicily. So everyone knows everyone, really.
Oh, yeah.
probably compare it to Icelandic community. I don't think it's bigger than that.
Did you have a lot of people paddling with you? Was that something that you were encouraging or to try to stay alone?
I didn't have anyone paddling with me. But unfortunately, there were some plans. People were making plans to come on the water with me and maybe paddle 1-2 days. But that kind of didn't happen because of the virus.
So if we talk, I don't want to talk a lot about the virus, you know, obviously really strange time for everyone, you know, doing a full-on expedition. In that time, what was that you experienced with the coronavirus and doing, you know, keeping your trip going and all that?
Well, it was quite surreal, to be honest, because when I was starting, there was nothing happening, you know, in Sicily and in Italy. I'm not even sure if there are any cases already. So there was no atmosphere of, you know, fear or threat when I was starting. And then it's kind of when I got to Palermo, so 2 weeks in, there were first cases in Sicily. At the end of the trip, no one could leave their home anymore. So it kind of escalated throughout the trip quite a bit. And for me, you know, I was on the water by myself all the time. So 24/7, I'm by myself. So it doesn't really affect me in that way when I'm on the water and when I'm paddling. But as soon as I get on land, and I interact with some people, then, you know, it started changing. So that shopping thing that I said about the ban that I said about, that I, you know, I was a little bit afraid that I'm not going to be able to finish.
Yeah.
And another thing was that I had to start thinking seriously about is in what conditions I paddle in. Because in a situation when all the resources need to go towards, you know, fighting this thing, I can't risk that something's going to happen to me. Because first of all, assistance can be very limited.
Yeah.
And another thing, it's not a responsible thing to do, to risk, you know, my own, you know, well-being and then having someone else having to come and help me if there's a slightly, you know, bigger problem going on out there. So I had to think about that as well, that, you know, I need to be responsible in that way. So I kind of toned down a little bit. I, you know, would not push as much in bigger conditions as before. And then the biggest problem, really, in terms of the virus was, how the hell am I going to get back home after I'm done with this?
Yeah, because, I mean, that was my next question, really. I mean, you're flying.
Yes.
How was it to get back home? Because, well, I say home. How was it to get back to Iceland after that? I mean, you're obviously coming from a highly infected area. Maybe not Sicily, but, you know, that area is highly infected. How was it to get home?
Well, it was just even getting the flights was a bit of a challenge. I mean, they limited because Italy, you know, is full shutdown, the borders are closed. There are just very few flights going out from Sicily. So the trip actually took me 3 days. I had to go from Sicily from Catania. I had to fly to Rome. From Rome, the next day I had to fly to London, and then the following day I had to fly from London to Reykjavik.
Just to
and,
get back.
Yeah, and it was interesting is, you know, is as I went from a country to a country, it kind of, the atmosphere changed, because in Italy everyone is, you know, very fearful, really, of, you know, the infections and the scale of it. In the UK, they start to be quite freaked out about it. You know, Iceland seems to have it under control. Everyone seems quite relaxed. You know, there's no anxiety in the air, which was, you know, everywhere in Italy, and it's quite easy to find already in the UK. So it kind of, I was a little bit afraid that I'm going to get stuck, you know, in Rome because they're going to cancel my flight. And I was afraid that I was going to be stuck in London because they're going to cancel my flight to Iceland. But thankfully, that didn't happen.
Exactly. We are really glad to hear. So that's a really good thing. I have one question that I have to ask.
Yeah.
Did you ever think in the trip, what the fuck am I doing here?
No. It's not easy to answer this question, but I would say no, I did not have that moment.
That's why I asked.
Yeah. because I knew exactly what I'm doing there.
Yeah.
I went into this trip with full, you know, awareness and confidence, because I wanted that challenge, and I wanted to be by myself for this long. I wanted to see how I am in this environment and within this experience. Like, I wanted to know myself in that. So even if there was a shadow of that thought of like, no, I know exactly, like, I got myself into it for a very clear reason, like, this is it. What did go through my mind quite a few times, especially after that incident that I described to you, was like, am I, you know, carved out for doing stuff like this by myself? Because being in advanced conditions by myself, so much different than being in big conditions with, you know, other people.
Yeah, that's a completely different thing.
It's completely, like, it's, and it, that fight between within my mind was amazing, because, you know, I know my technical skills. I know what can I take. I know how advanced I can go in conditions and how capable I am to handle them. I know that, you know, I've been there, I've tested that. But my mind's never been there alone. So I had to juggle a little bit there in some moments. So I had one or two times and I was like, I'm not sure if I'm one of those people, you know, that will keep going off by themselves to do this stuff. But at the same time,
solo thing, yes.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting, and this is it, you know. There's no one there to help you if something happens. Not even help you, just the thought that there's someone else there, you know, gives you some, you know, empowers you in some way. So, but by yourself, you're just by yourself with all of your weaknesses, all of your strengths, and they're going to keep coming out at different moments, and they're going to keep kicking you, you know, if you have a weaker moment there. So that was very interesting. And until now, I don't know if I'm going to keep doing that by myself. I definitely want to paddle with other people too, but I have a feeling in the back of my head that I will miss this feeling, you know, this feeling of vulnerability, this feeling of not being sure. I think I'm going to long for it at some point again.
Yeah, I think it haunts you. And at some time, if you are, you know, up for this, you know, seeking this moment and this thrill, sometimes it will, it will haunt you if that's something that you enjoyed. I promise you that.
Yeah, I find it interesting. That's kind of the big unknown that I think people step into when they decide to do something like that by themselves.
Yeah.
It's like an unlimited, you know, discovery, because every new situation is going to throw something, a new knowledge, new piece of knowledge about yourself.
Yeah. I mean, wow, what a fantastic story, Nanula. And thank you so much for sharing. I know, you know, the moment that you told me about wasn't easy, but thank you so much for that. I won't edit that one, but we'll see how that goes. I can't wait to hear your talk in the symposium in Stikkishomer.
Thank you.
That's going to be really interesting. Thank you very much. Have a great time in the week for next. How many days do you have left?
The 12.
12, wow. Thank you so much. All right?
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.